This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 699 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has killed at least 571 Palestinians and injured nearly 2,320 between August 27th and September 3rd, according to official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. The Israeli army has committed massacres in Gaza City and northern Gaza areas using airstrikes, fire belts, drone attacks, and bomb-filled remote-controlled vehicles to destroy residential buildings, ambulances, and tent shelters of displaced Palestinian families. On Saturday, August 30th, Israel bombed a bakery and a tent shelter in Al-Nasser neighborhood of Gaza City, killing at least 12 children and adults as they were waiting for bread. Journalist Mustafa Sarsour captured video of a man in agony as he mourned over the bodies of three small children. Al-Nasser neighborhood was bombed again on Monday, September 1st. Reporter Mahmoud Abu Salama reported from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, where bodies of Palestinians were brought in by their families on carts and stretchers. Another massacre of children happened on Tuesday, September 2nd, when at least five children were killed while waiting for water in Al-Mawasi in western Gaza, an area the Israeli army had designated as a so-called safe zone, but which it has bombed relentlessly over the course of the last 23 months. Mahmoud Bassal, the spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense, said that the children, quote, were standing in line to fill up water in the Al-Mawasi area, which has been described as safe, when the occupation forces directly targeted them, turning their search for life into a new massacre. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated on Wednesday that its field team reviewed several videos published by Israeli soldiers showing them, quote, shooting at Palestinians in displacement camps for amusement or to bet on their accuracy. This demonstrates that the shooting is not driven by any specific purpose or military necessity, but rather reflects a deliberate policy aimed at causing maximum civilian deaths and destruction, while denying Palestinians any sense of safety, Euromed added. The group documented the killing of Ahlam Ra'ed Faiz Al-Sha'er, 26, a mother of two, by Israeli army gunfire on the morning of September 1st while she was making tea in her tent in Al-Mawasi. Al-Sha'er's father-in-law told Euromed Monitor's team that his daughter-in-law was preparing tea for her two children, Ayman and Karam, when an Israeli quadcopter shot her in the head in front of them. He said his two grandchildren are now orphans. Humanitarian activist Saeed Shoaib captured this clip moments after Israeli forces committed a massacre in the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza on Sunday. The screams of children can be heard as the camera shows images of shredded bodies and injured children. Israel is using incendiary bombs and grenades to set fires to buildings and tent shelters. Instagram user Ehab Noor filmed footage of one such attack earlier this week with enormous plumes of flames and smoke enveloping a residential building. Israeli forces set the tents of displaced families ablaze on Wednesday, September 3rd, by dropping grenades on shelters in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood of Gaza City. A 60-year-old mother of five told an international news agency that Sheikh Radwan, quote, is being burned upside down. The occupation destroyed houses, burned tents, and drones played audio messages ordering people to leave the area. Quote, if the takeover of Gaza City isn't stopped, we might die, and we are not going to forgive anyone who stands and watches without doing anything to prevent our death, she said. Our contributor Asim Annabi in Gaza City wrote on Tuesday that, quote, every day and for 2 weeks now, several massive explosions have been occurring, which the Gazawis have come to call nasif, demolitions, where columns of smoke mixed with thick dust rise up. And while we cannot see the rubble of our homes and neighborhoods that are being demolished, the force of the explosion is enough to make a piece of your heart explode completely as soon as another part of Gaza explodes, Asim wrote. Israel used incendiary bombs to target cars and ambulances near a clinic in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood on Tuesday. Civil defense worker Mohammed Abu Luay filmed his colleagues as they scrambled for buckets of water, trying to extinguish the flames. That was the civil defense on Tuesday in Sheikh Radwan, Gaza City. Earlier that day, journalist Mahmoud Abu Salama reported from Sheikh Radwan to document the advance of the Israeli army. Abu Salama says that during the invasion, along with detonating bomb-filled vehicles to destroy buildings, Israeli snipers have been targeting Palestinians on the streets. He says, quote, as you can see, bullets are hitting civilians and gunfire is being fired from vehicles and snipers stationed around Sheikh Radwan, he said. While she was reporting live earlier this week, Al Jazeera journalist Noor Abu Rakba broke down in tears talking about her mother being forcibly displaced amidst the annihilation of Gaza City. She says, quote, my mom doesn't know where to go or where the next destination will be. The situation is extremely difficult. The occupation is trying to split the city of Gaza from its homeowners. It's trying to encircle them in the west of Gaza, showing them no mercy. It is shelling them wherever they are. It is shelling them in the tents. It is shelling them on the beach. Her colleague Hamam Yunus captured this clip. Noor Abu Rakba. Israel is determined to wipe Gaza City off the map, EuroMed Human Rights Monitor declared on September 1st, and it is using an arsenal of some of the most destructive tools ever built with complete impunity. Quote, the Israeli army is destroying about 300 residential units daily in Gaza City and Jabalia, using around 15 robots carrying nearly 100 tons of explosives, EuroMed stated. These bombings are taking place at an unprecedented pace, aimed at destroying Gaza City and displacing its residents as part of a dangerous escalation of the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip for nearly 23 months. EuroMed Monitor's field team documented the Israeli army's intensified use of armored, explosive-laden robots to achieve their goal of completely erasing one of Palestine's oldest and largest cities. EuroMed says that at the current rate, the rest of the city could be destroyed within 2 months, a timeline that may shorten further given the Israeli army's massive firepower and the absence of any pressure to halt its crimes against Palestinians. After preliminary assessments of the robot attacks, EuroMed Monitor estimates that each robot can completely or partially destroy around 20 housing units. This will soon leave hundreds of thousands of people without homes or shelters, forcing them to flee once again in deadly conditions without even the bare minimum for survival. The robots used in the bombing are essentially Israeli military vehicles, such as outdated M113 armored personnel carriers, loaded with tons of explosives and remotely piloted through civilian neighborhoods. They are directed to explode in carefully selected locations to maximize destruction. In some cases, the robot is not rigged to detonate, but is fitted with large boxes of explosives that are unloaded at the target site, after which the vehicle is returned to base for reuse in other operations. This reflects an organized military strategy aimed at systematically destroying residential neighborhoods and maximizing the scale of devastation, Euromed stated. However, the rescue workers and civil defense crews say that they are continuing to use all available tools to continue their work protecting their community. Mohammed Abu Luay, the civil defense worker who I mentioned earlier, he says, quote, "Have you ever asked yourself how we, throughout the entire period of war, how we saved thousands of lives and retrieved dozens of martyrs from underneath the rubble? Let me show you how we work with the equipment. Of course, the equipment is very simple and light, consisting of work gloves, a spade, a shovel, a bolt cutter, and a sledgehammer. If there is a ceiling and there are people underneath the rubble, we would have to break the ceiling so we can rescue the civilians. There are big and small cutters, big and small hammers. Give them to any country in the world and they would tell you it's impossible for them to work with these tools. But here in Gaza, nothing is impossible. With the power of God first and the high morale of our men second, we work with the simple equipment all the time. Here is Gaza, a symbol of pride, where nothing is impossible." Meanwhile, Israeli soldiers working with U.S. mercenary forces continue to trap, abduct, hunt, and kill Palestinians seeking aid at the private Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites every day. The Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza reported that since May 27th, when the GHF sites opened, until today, at least 2,339 Palestinians have been killed and more than 17,000 injured while trying to obtain meager amounts of food aid. This week, Instagram user Ehab Nour filmed himself at a GHF site under relentless fire while trying to obtain a bag of flour for his family. A group of experts at the United Nations, including Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in Palestine, Francesca Albanese, and Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, Michael Fakhri, condemned the ongoing enforced disappearing of starving Palestinians at the GHF sites, urging Israel to end its, quote, heinous crime against an already vulnerable population. Reports of enforced disappearances targeting starving civilians seeking their basic right to food is not only shocking, but amounts to torture. Using food as a tool to conduct targeted and mass disappearances needs to end now, the experts said. In late August, the rights group Defense for Children International Palestine reported that five Palestinian boys between the ages of 12 and 16 remain missing in separate incidents between late June and early August. DCIP says it interviewed the boys' families who have continually searched hospitals and morgues for their sons' bodies and have found no signs of them. Each of the boys disappeared while in the Zikim border area, located in North Gaza, where aid trucks cross into Gaza. The families fear their children have been abducted and disappeared by Israeli forces. Ayed Abu Aktesh, Accountability Program Director at DCIP, said, quote, "Israeli forces are shooting, detaining, and disappearing Palestinian children seeking aid in Gaza. Israeli forces have refused to disclose the numbers, names, and whereabouts of Palestinian children from Gaza in military custody, and these children have had no contact with the outside world. We have more than two decades of evidence indicating that Israeli forces torture Palestinian children in military detention. All of these children must be released and reunited with their families immediately." As the Electronic Intifada reported in August, a group of children who were kidnapped in late June by Israeli forces at a Gaza Humanitarian Foundation site in Rafah, southern Gaza, were released a month later. They described their brutal torture and detention inside Israel's Sde Tamon concentration camp, where they were interrogated, beaten, and psychologically and physically tortured. Children and adults alike are continuing to die of starvation across Gaza. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, this week stated that every single child in Gaza under 5 years old, more than 320,000 children, is at risk of acute malnutrition. On Wednesday, the Ministry of Health in Gaza reported that 6 deaths from starvation were recorded in a 24-hour period, including one child, bringing the total number of recorded starvation deaths to 367, including 131 children. Since the announcement 2 weeks ago by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, the health ministry says that 89 deaths, including 16 children, have been recorded. The Gaza government media office stated on Monday, September 1st, that still only 15% of the necessary amount of trucks have entered Gaza. Looting and theft by Israel-backed armed gangs continue, the media office reports, and Israel has prevented the entry of 430 basic and vital food items, such as eggs, meat, fish, cheese, and other dairy products, fruits and vegetables, and nutritional supplements required for pregnant and nursing mothers. Israel assassinated at least 2 journalists in Gaza this week. On Sunday, August 31st, Islam Muharib Abed, who worked as a reporter for Al-Quds Al-Yom satellite channel, was killed in an attack on her apartment in Gaza City. On Tuesday, September 2nd, photojournalist Rasmi Jihad Salem was killed. He worked for the Al-Manara media company, Press TV, and Al-Alam TV. The Shahab news agency reported that he was killed by Israeli shelling in Gaza City. The Gaza government media office says that at least 248 reporters and media workers have been killed by Israel since October 2023. Israeli forces once again bombed the inside walls of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah on September 1st, for the 14th time since October 2023, according to the Gaza government media office. Israel bombed a tent for displaced persons inside the walls of the hospital grounds, specifically near the hospital's outpatient clinic, the media office added. Quote, this resulted in injuries at the site of the bombing, material damage, and the immediate threat of death to dozens of patients inside the hospital. In Gaza City, reporter Saeed Hezbollah filmed a low-flying quadcopter drone hovering over the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital on Wednesday. At Al-Shifa Hospital, also in Gaza City, emergency room doctor Farhan Abdulaziz described the total destruction of hospital buildings. He walked around the nearby cemetery where patients were buried with the headboards of their hospital beds, serving as tombstones.
Standing outside Shifa Hospital, as you can see behind me, this is one side of the building completely destroyed. Blasted the walls through and then set on fire. Patients were inside that were burned alive. There was, of course, killing of patients and their families. And right outside, on the side of the hospital, you find this graveyard. And even though it's been months, you still find the smell of the dead bodies for a few reasons. One, normally we put the bodies in cement graves. These are shallow graves without any of that capability. The bodies are put right on the ground. But one of the things that breaks my heart is that you see behind me, you can see to my left, immediately behind me, in the third, 3 different parts of the hospital beds. The back part of beds that literally in residency, we would rush to rapid responses and take those off to intubate a patient and save their life. Literally, we would take that off to have access to the patient's head and save their life. And now you see it's a marker of death here at Shifa Hospital in Gaza, where they're using literally the markers of hospital beds to mark the graves of patients and families that were murdered, massacred by the Israeli army when they came here and killed how many people they killed and imprisoned others and took them to the torture camps. It's such a sad moment in history, but a mark that we should not forget of the reality of this Israeli occupation.
That was Dr. Farhan Abdulaziz. The lawyer for Dr. Hossam Abu Safiya, the pediatrician and director of Kamal Adwan Hospital in North Gaza, who was abducted by Israeli forces at the end of December 2024, was able to visit her client on August 28th. Gid Qasim said that her client, Dr. Abu Safiya, and his nephew are both being held in the Ofer military prison. They're both suffering from scabies and other skin infections as the Israeli prison guards are forcing them to wear the same clothes every day and are only allowed infrequent 2-minute baths. Abu Safiya and his nephew have both lost a third of their body weight and are being held in cells without access to sunlight. They're allowed outside only 30 minutes a month, she said. Dr. Abu Safiya gave his lawyer the following message to the world. Quote, I entered in the name of humanity, and I will leave in the name of humanity. I am the one who was abducted from inside the hospital. We will remain on our land and continue to provide healthcare services to the people, God willing, even from a tent. Meanwhile, doctors and staff at Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza City, together with the Palestine Red Crescent Society, announced that against all odds, they have successfully reactivated the cardiac catheterization clinic this week. The Red Crescent said that in a 48-hour period, medical teams successfully performed 3 cardiac catheterization procedures, with 3 more scheduled, despite the dire conditions and the shortage of essential medicines and critical medical supplies. This achievement, they say, is especially significant in light of the continued closure of border crossings, which prevents thousands of patients from traveling outside the Strip for treatment. In related news, the Hind Rajab Foundation announced that along with the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, they submitted a formal complaint to the International Criminal Court regarding the massacre at Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis on August 25th. The attack, as we reported last week, killed 22 civilians, including 5 journalists, 3 hospital staff, 1 doctor, a civil defense worker, and 1 child, 14-year-old Rayan Omar Mahmoud Abu Omar. More than 50 others were injured in what can only be described as a deliberate double-tap strike carried out with full knowledge of the civilian presence, the group stated. Lieutenant Colonel Bar Virkat of the Sayeret Golani, the reconnaissance unit of the Golani Brigade, Colonel Bar Ganon of the Golani Brigade, Colonel Miki Sharvit of the 188th Brigade, Brigadier General Moran Omar of the 36th Division, were named in the complaint to the ICC, along with other commanders and top military leaders, including Israeli Prime Minister and war crimes fugitive Benjamin Netanyahu. Quote, with today's filing before the ICC, the Hind Rajab Foundation and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights demand that the court open proceedings and issue arrest warrants against those responsible, from the Golani operators who designated the target, to the tank commanders who launched the missiles, to the generals who approved the attack, and ultimately to Prime Minister Netanyahu, who provided political cover. This massacre was not the result of chaos or confusion, but of a carefully executed plan under a clear chain of command, the group say. Journalists, doctors, rescue workers, and even a child were killed deliberately under the watching eyes of Israeli drones. This was not only a war crime, it was an act of genocide. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight What My Sister Teaches Me About Survival by Asim El-Nabi, writing from Gaza City. Nearly 13 years ago, during Israel's assault on Gaza in 2012, I took this photo of my youngest sister, Nesma, Asim writes. She was almost 5 years old, full of energy and curiosity. Despite the power cuts and relentless bombardment, she would sit quietly with her book, diligently completing her kindergarten exercises. At the time, I didn't realize that this small act, holding a pen amid chaos, would become the very definition of her life in Gaza. Today, history has repeated itself. I took another photo of Nesma, now 17 years old. The scene looks the same, Nesma, her books, and her determination. But everything else has changed. She is no longer in her room. She has been displaced for months. She no longer has teachers or classrooms. Her school is being used as a shelter. There are no textbooks, desks, electricity, or internet. She studies in the middle of a war, surrounded by hunger, siege, and death. She's survived 6 Israeli assaults on Gaza since she was born in 2008. She's brilliant, fluent in 3 languages, gifted in mathematics and physics, and dreams of becoming a doctor. But now she studies under unimaginable conditions. Still, she perseveres. Gaza's children embody extraordinary sacrifice. They have endured starvation, thirst, displacement, and the constant threat of death. What makes their suffering so profound is that the world continues to watch and express outrage, but has failed to end the genocide. Liberation is not just about weapons or politics. It is about preserving life, identity, and dignity in the face of annihilation. In Gaza, education is not just about personal ambition. It is about collective survival. Every child like Nesma who continues to learn is insisting on a future in defiance of Israel's aims to destroy it. Education cannot thrive under bombs, and no child should have to teach herself in a shelter without electricity or clean water. Our supporters outside Gaza must not only push for an end to the genocide, but also commit to rebuilding our schools, universities, and libraries, our places of knowledge and culture. Ultimately, Palestine does not need charity. It needs freedom, dignity, and the ability for its children to dream again without fear. Nesma has become my teacher. She reminds me every day that perseverance is a form of resistance, that survival itself is a statement of defiance. While powerful forces beyond their control make decisions with a profound impact on their fate, children like her quietly rebuild hope, one word, one page, and one dream at a time. When I see her diligently pursue her studies under the worst of circumstances, I know that one day Nesma will fulfill her dream of becoming a doctor. She will heal the wounds of her people, just as she heals mine with her determination to study, dream, and build a life despite the war, starvation, and siege. Those are excerpts from What My Sister Teaches Me About Survival by Asim al-Nabi, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. Asim is an engineer, a father, a husband, a writer, and the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality in Gaza City. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza. Students of the Gaza-based Camp Breakers dance crew showed off their skills this week. Music teacher Ahmad Muin Abu Amsha, whose video, as you'll remember, we featured just a few weeks ago, showing him and his students harmonizing with the hum of the drones, says he and his colleagues took their students to the beach to play music. Quote, they brought their instruments, and to our surprise, Muin, Ibrahim, Yusuf, Muhammad, and Yasin began singing and playing music for the children in the tents by the shore. We watched with pride and joy, realizing that our students are now following in their teachers' footsteps, spreading love, music, and hope to others. This is the strongest proof of our success in teaching music, even in the hardest times, he says. That was from Ahmed Muin Abu Amsha. And finally, social media user and mother Noor Abdul Latif posted this photo of her son, Yamin, on his first day of kindergarten. She posted later in the day, quote, after his first day, joy lit him up so brightly, so he let go of my hand for the first time since the war began. He dashed ahead, his feet barely touching the ground, as if the sea breeze had lifted him, carried him, played with his hair. Fly, O little bird of my heart, for that's what birds are born to do, to rise, to dance with the wind, to taste the sky in freedom. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.